Deadline with the White House. Sir, may begin.
Operator, thank you, and good afternoon to everybody. My name is Tim Gagline from the White House Office of Public Liaison. We know we have people joining us from all 50 states around the country. We really appreciate you taking time to join us for this call. Of course, the President has nominated Harriet Myers for the second of the two open seats during the Bush presidency. As you know, Harriet has been a confidant and close to the President for a number of years, has held the most senior possible positions here in the White House, most recently as White House counselor. She is a colleague of long standing and has the President's every confidence. And we so appreciate our friends and allies and coalition members around the country who are working with us, working with the President, to help confirm Harriet Myers. And we thought it would be a good thing going into the weekend to gather all of you on the line and be able to talk a little bit about her and, to the extent possible, answer some questions or concerns that you may have. And it's my real pleasure to have joining us the chairman of the Republican National Committee, former White House colleague, our former political director here, Ken Mellman. Ken, good afternoon, and thanks for joining.
Thanks, Tim, and I'll make a couple brief comments, and then we have some other folks who I think also wanted to make some comments. Let me open just by saying that I think a lot of those of us who believe in judicial restraint and who are constitutionalists are always going to be cautious when new nominees are named to the Supreme Court. And one of the reasons we need to be cautious is that so many people in the past have had record voting that's different than what had been advertised. And to my thinking, one of the most important things you have is someone who is nominated who the President knows their thinking, knows their philosophy. He's not taking the word of his chief of staff or the word of the senator or the words of anything other than what he knows about the person. In this case, it's hard to imagine a president having a better knowledge of a nominee than the President of the United States has of Harriet Myers, someone he's worked closely with for more than a decade, someone whose philosophy he shares and she shares his philosophy, and someone who has seen her operate that philosophy every single day. This isn't taking someone else's word. This is the President observing over 10 years, and most recently over several years, every single day, what her judicial philosophy is. She identified it clearly. Her philosophy is that of judicial restraint. So unlike in the past where it was one of these things which we had to trust what someone else said, in this case, we have a president that knows the nominee better than we can imagine and better than we've ever seen. Second, Harriet Myers has served with distinction at a time when she was the top legal advisor to the president on some critically important issues, whether the issues were whether to renominate Janice Rogers Brown and Priscilla Owen and Bill Pryor, whether the question was where the administration ought to come out on key policy matters that affect the judiciary, that affect families, that affect other issues. The president's positions have been very strong, and we know his top advisor has been Harriet Myers. And so when people say, well, we know the president's got the right approach, but how do we know Harriet Myers? It's like someone saying, you know, the president has the right position on the war on terror, but we don't know if Donald Rumsfeld does. The fact is, she is his key advisor on these issues. And the third thing that I think also is important to remember is this. One of the most important and I think troubling areas where we've seen judicial activism recently is in the ability of any administration in the future to carry out its leadership on the global war on terror. And I think having someone who has real-world experience when future issues come up who will be able to say, here's the real-world practical implications of when, for instance, the courts hamstring the ability of the administration or the Defense Department or somebody else to deal with the terrorist threat we face. I think that's an important and unique perspective that someone who's spent her whole life on the court doesn't have, but someone who has served in a White House, particularly in this White House, does have. So other speakers are going to talk about other issues, but I think these are three very important things. Number one, how do we avoid what those in the, what I like to call people who grow in office, which is to say, who do have things do differently than we expect them to. I think the way we know that is because this president knows his nominee better than ever before. Second, top advisor at a time when this president has made some incredibly effective decisions. And third, her unique ability to understand how bad judicial activism is on the critical issue of the global war on terror. These are all important issues, as well as our understanding that this is somebody who's a longstanding record, whose longstanding perspective are all important, and I think those are things that we need to consider. I'm going to turn it over to several other distinguished speakers. First, Chuck Colson. Chuck, are you with us?
I am. Ken, thank you. Appreciate what you said, and the fact is that I've heard George Bush talk on a number of occasions about his commitment to judges. I know how passionately conservative judges, strict constructionists, I know how passionately he feels about this, and he knows Harriet Myers better than anyone, so I take his word on this completely. I also had lunch with her one day and was impressed with her quiet dignity, her restraint. She's a modest, humble woman. With an enormously deep intellect. That impresses me because we have too many judges that think they're speaking from Mount Olympus. I like somebody who's got a little bit of modesty and humility. And I can't imagine a better compliment right now for Judge Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts. So I think it's a great appointment. I'm very enthusiastic. I think the fact that it's been received not as a big battle cry. A lot of conservatives wanted a big battle, but I don't want a big battle. I want a judge. And I think she's just the person for it. Now, Jim Dobson is staying for this call. I can't because I've just come out of a board meeting. He and I are joined at the hip and talked about this at great length. So, Jim, if anything I've said triggers questions, I'm going to count on you to handle them for me. But I think we really ought to now, as a conservative movement, line up behind this nominee and make it a concerted push. Believe me, when she gets up there and they start on her, it won't matter if she's walked across the Potomac River. They're going to exact their pound of flesh, and I think we need to be united behind her.
Thanks a lot, Chuck. Dr. Dobson, he has given you the cue. Thanks for being on this call.
Well, thank you, Ken. And, goodness, Chuck, I appreciate what you said. You are a constitutional attorney, and I'm not, and I have leaned very heavily on you through this process. We talked four times after we knew where the nomination was going, so I have really appreciated the things that you've said, and they've had an influence on me. I would just like to issue a disclaimer before I make my statement, because this is one scary moment. Everything I care about is on the line because the court has usurped the other two branches of government and has made all great social decisions, answered them or tried to answer them for the American people, and taken away from the people the responsibilities that Abraham Lincoln talked about in the Gettysburg Address. He said this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And it has not been that on all of the great social and moral issues. And because the seat that's being vacated by Justice O'Connor has been a swing vote, this decision is of earth-shaking importance in my view. And that's why I've taken it very seriously, and why I have maybe drawn the conclusion that I have. The second disclaimer that I want to say is I'm speaking only for myself, not trying to argue with anybody or sway anybody. I've got close friends who are mad at me because of the way I see this, but I think each of us has to do that. But I have drawn the conclusion that Harriet Myers will be an excellent justice on the United States Supreme Court. I'm not absolutely positive of that because you can't know till they get in power, and then it's too late. And power itself tends to corrupt, and it has happened with some of the other members of the court, in my view, and it could happen to her. But I believe that that the president has very carefully made this decision. It is very consistent with two promises that he's made, probably more strongly than any other two campaign promises. He promised to reform the judiciary, put people on that court who will not legislate from the bench, who will not try to create social policy from the court, and who will respect the Constitution. And he has been absolutely consistent on that issue for 4.5 years. I don't know of any judge or chief justice now that has contradicted that promise. The second thing is his commitment to the pro-life position. This is his personal belief and philosophy, and I think probably theology, and he has kept it. And I appreciate that. And all the conservatives out there that are beating him up today and riding his back over having chosen Harriet Myers, I think they ought to take a deep breath and consider the fact that he has signed the partial birth abortion ban legislation, and he has supported the Mexico City policy, and he has been against embryonic stem cell research. I mean, he's been consistent on both those things. For that reason, I believe that he would be very, very foolish to abandon his base and to have lied to the people about what his plans were, and to have put a person on the court who will change his legacy forever. This is his legacy. I said on a program yesterday that it will not be Iraq, as important as that is. 20 years from now, it will be who he put on the court. He knows that, and I believe I believe he has appointed a woman that he is sure is consistent with that. Finally, and I'll close with this, that I've done my homework. I know some others have too. She is widely known in Dallas and in other places in Texas. And I've talked to people that have known her for 25 years and who have been very, very close to her. I know the church she goes to. I know what her history is in terms of her own faith commitment. And that means a whole lot to me, because there's a base there. There's a moral understanding and a worldview that I believe will hold her in good stead. So am I absolutely positive? No. I don't know you can be. The Rocky Mountain News this morning said that Dobson admits doubts. You bet I do. It's that important. But I believe the president has done the right thing, and I support it.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dobson. Our next speaker is the White House Political Director, Sarah Taylor.
Thanks, Ken. I don't have much to add. I think all the speakers have done a great job articulating some of these key issues here. But I would just follow up, and like Ken and others on the phone, have worked for the president for an incredibly long time, since the day he became a candidate and for office back in 1999. And there's one thing that's absolutely been consistent about his commentary on judges, and that is that he believes strongly in ending judicial activism and putting only people on the bench who will interpret the Constitution. And as Mr. Dobson just said, and as Ken and others have said, he's been absolutely 100% consistent in that effort. And I'm confident, having worked with Harry personally for the last 5 years, that he made a choice that will uphold that. The woman on television, Harriet, said on television live in her announcement exactly just that she believes that the responsibility of every justice is to uphold the Constitution. And certainly having known her and known her character, I believe her strongly. She will be a fantastic Supreme Court justice. And I know we understand how important this is, that a lot of people for a long time have worked hard on behalf of these issues. And she's somebody who is honest, who has incredible character. And when she says to people that she's going to behave in a certain way, she always does it. And I have enormous confidence in her, and that she will be an incredible and justice, somebody who not only makes decisions based on what's in the Constitution, but makes decisions that she believes strongly in.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Jay Sekulow, are you on?
I am, Ken. Thanks. I wanted to approach this, and I agree with what everyone has said, and I want to echo something that Jim Dobson Dobson and Chuck Colson said, and that is the president is keenly aware of what's at stake here. I had the opportunity almost 6 years ago to introduce then Governor Bush to a large gathering in Washington, D.C., and before that introduction, he and I sat in the back in the green room for about 30 minutes and discussed judges. And from that moment forward till very recently, in the opportunities that I've had to be with the president, and we've talked about judges, this is a president that knows not only is this a situation where he has a legacy that's at issue, but it's the direction for the country, and he knows that. And I think, and I was encouraged when the president nominated Harriet Myers. And let me tell you this from the perspective of someone who litigates regularly at the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm involved in 3 cases at the court this term, and believe me, I want Harriet Myers' vote on these critical cases. And one of those cases now, 4th case is up there involving the issue of partial birth abortion, something the president championed for as the leader of the executive branch of government, is now was passed, of course, by Congress, signed by the president, and now is in the hands of the Supreme Court of the United States. And last time it was a 5-4 decision. So there is much at stake as this congressional ban goes before the court, and we could see the replacement for Justice O'Connor being, who was the swing vote last time against us, we could see this swing the other way. Now, none of us know how an individual judge or justice is going to rule in a particular case. But for me, the critical aspect of this has been, in my conversations with Harriet Myers over the last year, been how she views the role of a judge. And she views the role of a judge to not be that of a policymaker. She views it as a limited role. She understands that is the aspect and the intent of the founders and the Constitution. So I'm encouraged there. And I'll tell you this. My view is that bringing someone outside of the judiciary into the Supreme Court is a good thing. And I'm saying this again as someone that litigates at the court. And there's a historic aspect of this, and I think not a historic aspect that should be ignored. When the president nominated Harriet Myers, this is the first evangelical that's been nominated to the Supreme Court since 1931. I think that's significant. Now, we've got a lot of great friends at the Supreme Court of the United States that are devout Catholics, and I think that's great. So I don't want to, this isn't a religious discussion in that sense, but this was a bold move by the president, and I think an important move. And those that don't yet, have not yet come to support Harriet, I understand that. You don't know, and that's fine. But as Jim Dobson said, and I wanted to reiterate, let's let the evidence come in, and it's beginning to. You're already seeing this. And I think time will tell, and time will be very good for Harriet Myers. And I've said this to a couple of people yesterday. John Roberts did a magnificent job before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and so will Harriet Myers in her own way. It may be different than John's, but it will be in her own way. This is one smart woman. You don't get to be the president, the first female president of the Texas Bar Association, without being a very good and very smart and very able lawyer. And I think she's going to be a great justice on the Supreme Court.
Thanks a lot, Jay. Is Leonard Leo on?
I'm here, and thank you, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon to offer my own experiences with Harriet Myers, so all of you can make your own informed judgments about where you are on this very important nomination. I have had the privilege of seeing Harriet Myers at work on issues that are of tremendous interest and concern to us, most particularly the issue of judicial selection and her commitment to conservative judicial philosophy is very deep and something she takes very seriously and works rigorously to project within this administration. I think she said it extremely well when she accepted the president's nomination from the Oval Office very early this week, when she stated essentially that every generation has a responsibility to respect and apply the founders' vision of the limited role of our courts. And then she went on to say that she understood that it was the judge's duty to strictly apply the law and the Constitution. Those are, in today's partisan environment and in the wake of the Bork and Thomas nominations, philosophically significant and philosophically laden terms. Everyone understands today what it means to ascribe to the framers' vision of our Constitution and a limited role of the courts. It's a way of making very clear to everyone that you are committed to interpreting the Constitution according to its text and as it was written by our framers. Now, I happen to think, based on my experiences, that Harriet is a very honest person, and she knows what she said And she understands those words because day in and day out, she's helping the president pick judges who also ascribe to the framers' vision of separation of powers and federalism and constitutional interpretation by the courts. And so those were important words. And I think she recognized that the world really didn't know much about her because the jobs that she's had are not jobs like politicians have. They're jobs where you're working behind the scenes. And so in the interest of truth in advertising, she told us all a little bit about what her judicial philosophy is. And I'm sure that she expects that as the process winds its way to a conclusion, she will have plenty of opportunities to elaborate on those principles that she first mentioned on that Monday, and that people such as myself and Jay have had the privilege of seeing her apply in action. I think one of the thing is in order. You know, I think all of us have some sense of what some of the fatal flaws have been in terms of other Supreme Court nominations. And one of the biggest problems that Supreme Court justices have is that they lose their footing. They begin to grow in office. Judge Silverman called this the greenhouse effect, referring to Linda Greenhouse of the New York Times, bowing to the pressures of the left and the media. And I think that as we look at her background, this is a woman who is a devout Christian, who was one of the first women partners in Texas, who was not afraid when running for city council to make her views clear regarding the extent of what are appropriate homosexual rights and what might not be something she would want to support. I don't think that those positions or affiliations tell us a whole lot about how she's going to decide a particular case. But I do think what they tell us, and we shouldn't use them for that purpose, but I do think what they tell us is that this is a woman who's very comfortable in her skin. She has a lot of courage, and she doesn't care a whole lot about what other people think. And, boy, I'll tell you, that for me is very, very important when you're talking about putting somebody on the Supreme Court, because that's a pressure cooker. And I think that that is what the president meant when he said that he knew this woman for 20 years and that this is a woman who 20 years from now is going to have the same perspective on judicial philosophy. And that's impressive for a woman lawyer who's got to deal in the polite society of a liberal legal culture that doesn't look too kindly upon all these different things that we're learning about her. So I think this is a woman of tremendous strength and courage and independence who understands the framers' vision of the Constitution and is prepared to apply it.
Thank you, Leonard. Has Dr. Land joined us? I know he wasn't on
before. Yes, sir. I'm here.
Oh, great. Thank you for joining us, and glad you're next.
Well, I appreciate what everybody has said, and I agree with it. And I would just say that this president, there's nothing that he's been clearer about and has stood more steadfastly for, not only against unprecedented opposition. Remember Tom Daschle and the obstructionist, and this president has refused to flinch on the issue of judicial nominees that are strict constructionists, original intent jurists. Let's remember the Chief Justice was once a filibustered nominee. And who was helping the president pick those nominees? Harriet Myers. And I think that the one of the things that someone who's a sixth generation Texan, I want to add to this call, and that is this. The two things that are probably there are two virtues that are valued as highly as any virtue can be valued in the Texas culture, and those two virtues are courage and loyalty. Courage and loyalty. And this president, and he knows that Harriet Myers is also a Texan, and with a degree of understanding that would never have to be articulated, he and she both understand that if she were to get on the court and she were to rule in ways that are contrary to the way the president would want her to approach her role as a justice, it would be a deep personal betrayal and would be perceived as such both by him and by her. And he knows in nominating a woman who comes from outside the Beltway bubble, whose culture was formed in Texas, and who doesn't care what the New York Times thinks. She doesn't care. And he doesn't care, which is one reason why they've been successful conservatives. I think this is a brilliant nomination, and I think it'll be confirmed in the way she rules on cases that are very important to us over the next decade.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Land. Operator, I think we're going to take a minute because there's so many people on the call, but we open it up for maybe a couple questions, and then I believe we tried to keep it to a half an hour, so we'll keep it to that short period.
While we're waiting for the questions and answers, I might emphasize a lot of folks may not know that Ken Starr has also very strongly supported Harriet Myers, as has National Right to Life, Rick Warren, and a number of other individuals and groups. And we have sent much of that very widely, but we want to let folks know that there are any number of places where they can tap in and read the endorsements or support from other folks.
Tim, can we talk, or we got to sit here in silence?
No, by all means, please make a comment, Dr. Dobbs.
I just started to say that after the president made his announcement, there seemed to be a shockwave that went through the conservative community, and especially the Christian conservative community, and people didn't know what to think. I'm seeing that change now, and I really believe that as people are getting comfortable with her nomination, there is much more confidence about who she is and what the president has done. That may not be accurate, but that's the way I see it.
This is Sarah. I would second that. I was in Iowa last night doing a Republican dinner and talked to a lot of folks and a lot of active, you know, people in conservative circles at the dinner. And, you know, all of them were kind of sort of dumbfounded by the way that some of the conservative media has been acting about this. And obviously we'd like to learn more about her, but, you know, haven't really...
I concur with this, Jay. I concur with that also. I think it's been that as the time has helped us here, and we'll continue to as more information gets out.
Thank you. We're ready for our first question. Our first question comes from Paul Weirich.
We understand that when she was on the Dallas City Council, that she had initially come out against a tax increase, and then after a day of voting and much pressure, she voted for a tax increase mainly to restore funding for expansion of libraries. This was not a question of public safety. That had all been taken care of. What troubles me about this is that she had initially been very much opposed to it, and at the end, she was the swing vote that ended up being in favor of it. That is troublesome if you think of it in terms of the court, because there is an enormous amount of pressure on the court.
May I address that? This is Leonard.
Anybody can address it.
Sure. Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
That's a very important comment, and all I can tell you, Paul, are my own experiences and observations as someone who has been a part of the legal profession and has traveled within the organized bar community as someone who's not, you know, particularly part of the mainstream. If you look at her overall background, she's done an awful lot that bucks up against the system, and she doesn't seem to care about it. There's been a lot of hay made of the fact that she was part of the effort at the American Bar Association to get the association to rescind its position on abortion on demand. Again, I don't think that tells you anything about, you know, what she's going to do on Roe or any other abortion case. But I think what it does tell you, if you know a little something about the culture at the ABA, that, you know, she's got guts. And she's not going to shrink away from positions that she feels very strongly about. And I just think there are a number of other instances that I know of where that's the case and where she's done things or where she has views or perspectives or affiliations that are really just at odds with the liberal big law firm culture that even exists in Dallas, Texas. And so while we may all find various, you know, incidents where she might have changed her mind about things, and we'd have to know more about why and what happened, my own experience with her is that she she does, she's very comfortable with who she is, and that she, she's not gonna, break from her views without having, you know, a good reason. It's not gonna be politics or because she wants to be invited to the next cocktail party in Georgetown.
Thanks, Leonard. Why don't we take the next question, operator, please?
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marlis Pampa.
Hey, Marlis, how are you?
I am fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm great.
Yeah,
for those who don't know Marlis, Marlis has been one of the leaders in Iowa Right to Life and so many other important causes for more years than she'd like me to say.
Talk
about a trailblazer. Marlis is a wonderful lady, somebody that helped make history in 2004 when we turned Iowa from blue to red.
Well, thank you very much. I want to be supporting Harriet Myers, and I believe in President Bush. I believe I believe all that he's told us. I've watched the nominees that he has placed before us over the last several years of his presidency. I've seen all of the good, strong constructionists he's placed up, and I see no reason why he's placed all of these wonderful constructionists up that when he gets the chance to put people up for the highest court in the land, that would change when he would place them up for the Supreme Court. I'm wondering if you could help me, however, with some explanations of what I tell our folks when they're, I think one of the more troubling pieces that are out there is the piece from the WorldNet Daily. And it's the piece that talks about, it does have some things about when she was city councilwoman. It also has some talk about a position that she took on gay adoption. And I'm wondering if somebody can shed some light on any of the things that are in that particular piece for us so that we can just have some clearer insight for those of us who are supporters of the president and really have faith in the fact that he's there for us and is going will do nothing but support or put a good person in this position.
I can address the gay adoption issue, Ken, if you'd like.
Please do.
That's the one that I would most like.
There has been a news report suggesting that Harriet Myers supported ABA resolutions pertaining to gay adoption and the creation of the International Criminal Court. I'm assuming that that's what you're referring
to. That's exactly
yes.
What was reported in WorldNet Daily.
The news reports are wrong and false in the following respect. And I know this from experience having served as one of the few conservative members of the ABA House of Delegates. The Select Committee of the ABA House of Delegates, which she chaired, is basically a glorified mailman. What they do is they gather up all of the proposed resolutions that different committees and sections of the ABA want to have put before the House of Delegates for a vote. And the Select Committee transmits them by mail, or today by email, to all of the House of Delegates members. So they have the materials they need in advance of the meeting so they can begin thinking about what positions they're going to take on the resolutions. The Select Committee does not draft the resolutions. They do not opine on whether they are appropriate for ABA consideration, and they in no way engage in any editorial or drafting responsibility. So basically, she was simply transmitting paper to people within the ABA saying, here are the things you're going to have to consider when you're at the House of Delegates meeting and there are resolutions up for a vote.
Yeah, and there's another aspect of that as well, unrelated to the ABA section, but she answered a question through a questionnaire put forward on the issue of the Texas sodomy statute that was at the Supreme Court 2 years ago. And remember, this was a statute that, and I'm not opining on this, that Justice Thomas called uncommonly silly. Yet she said she would not repeal it. And I thought that said a lot about her views on that kind of issue. In the right way. I mean, she understood the role of the legislature, and she looked at it in her view and thought that there was a legitimate reason to have these things. So, you know, I think you got to put it all in context, and it was more of an administrative function at that ABA subcommittee.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Marlis, it's Sarah. I owe you an email. I've been out for 2 days, so I have something that will help you on that.
Okay, great. Thank
you. All right. Why don't we turn to the next question, please?
Thank you. Next question comes from Rick Warren.
Well, hi, Ken and Tim and everybody.
How are you?
Great. I don't need to say a whole lot, but because I didn't think I was going to be in on this conference call, but I think it was for this very moment that we had the last election. it's the reason I jumped in and mobilized, you know, our network, because it's all about the court. And I think for all of the reasons already mentioned, Harriet's a great choice. I mean, she's a great person, she's a great woman, she's a great Christian, she's a great thinker, and I just throw my support behind her.
Yes, we really appreciate that very much. That means a lot.
Yeah, thank you very much, Rick. We really appreciate that. Thank you all very much. I know we promised everyone we'd be done in a relatively brief period, and it's 4:15. We said we'd make it a half an hour. I'm sorry it took a little longer than we promised. Thank you all for your help and for your leadership, and we look forward to continue working with you on this important issue.
Thank you for attending today's conference call, and have a nice day.